oftentimes it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who's the Dean of the Graduate School of Education. And due to COVID-19, we are not in the studio. We are Zooming in today, as will our guest be Zooming in.
Denise, get out the vote, Pope.
Dan, we're not doing a voting show today.
No, we're not. But before the show, Denise was helping me understand the details of voting. This has been a common issue where in California, you have to vote on so many things. And Denise loves it. So I just wanted to give her a shout out for being so helpful.
Well, I'm glad to convince you to vote the way I did.
When
you get informed, you get to kind of sway a little bit. But I tried to give you the option to disagree. You absolutely have the option to disagree.
Right. So for Proposition 97, you said, it doesn't really matter, Dan. Just vote whatever you want.
Exactly. No. We do want to tell everyone to vote, even if this is playing in the middle of March. We still want you to remember you have voting rights and you should vote. I believe that we're going to start with a little story of the many different places that you've been a teacher. Yes?
Right. So today we're really lucky. We have Travis Bristol, who's going to talk about bringing African-American teachers back into the classroom. And how do we do that? And why that's important. But as a start, I've taught in different places. And when I taught in Kenya, I was the only white teacher for many, many square miles. So there I was the token white. They were very proud. They would parade me around.
What does that mean, Dan? They would parade you around. What does that mean?
The people who ran the school could sort of brag to the other schools that they had a teacher from America. It actually wasn't the fact that I was white. It was the fact that I was American.
Uh-huh.
So when I taught in Los Angeles, it was in the inner city. And there was a good distribution of African-Americans, Spanish-speaking, and white teachers. Alaska was the one that I think most pertinent to this show where, so I taught in a small Indian village and there were probably, you know, six total teachers there and only one of them was Native American. And this was always a very big concern. How can we get more Native Americans teaching in the Native American community?
And what were some of the ways that they tried to do that? Why weren't there more?
Yeah, well, it's tough, you know, so this was a complicated time for me. I came in and my sort of the curriculum was college readiness, right? So it was like Algebra 1, Algebra 2. But you know, these kids had lived their whole lives in a town of 150 adults. And so in 5 years of teaching, I managed to get one young woman into college. You know, not me, but we as a school, we helped her get into college. And she lasted for about 3 months and then came home homesick because it was such a change. You know, she'd never lived in a city. So this bears on getting Native American teachers because to be a teacher, you had to have a college education.
Mm.
And so very complicated because at some level, it would have been better at this point in time to have taught like small engine repair, like chainsaws and cars and things like that, so that they could have all gotten really good jobs. Right.
Instead of trying to do a college curriculum.
Right, right. Where, you know, they're going in and then they come back because it's such a culture shock. If you've lived in a town where you know every single person and then suddenly you go to a city. So it's very complicated, but that's why it was hard for them to get Native teachers. It was a very high priority, but they had to go through college.
I'm excited for our guest because I have all sorts of questions about sort of what about the race and ethnicity of the teacher matters and is it, you know, seeing sort of a model up there and you feel more comfortable learning from someone who understands your life so we have a lot to talk about with Travis. Right. Should I introduce
him? It was also a question of curriculum. I always wondered if there was a Native American teacher teaching high school. would he or she have said, this is the wrong curriculum for these students? Was that something that was under his or her control? Or maybe there would be a way to feather sort of more relevant pedagogy with kind of the goals of getting them into the rest of society.
It is tricky because, yeah. I mean, we've heard that even the CTE curriculum, right, which is the technical education curriculum, there have been calls saying that that's racist, because if you look at the population of kids who are put into those technical skills, which is kind of what you mentioned about engine control, it's more of the Black and brown kids. And is that being helpful? Racist? Who makes those decisions, right? This is all, we're going to have a good talk today. I'm excited. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest, Travis Bristol, professor at the University of California, Berkeley Graduate School of Education, which normally we have professors from Stanford, but Travis is a proud Stanford alum. He graduated from here, the Graduate School of Education Teacher Education Program. His research looks at race and gender in school, as well as teaching policies and practices, and he studied different initiatives intended to recruit and retain more Black teachers, and that's what we're talking about today. So welcome, Travis.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Dan.
So we've got lots and lots of questions for you. I guess the first is, can you talk to us about, you know, why does the race and ethnicity of a particular teacher matter, whether it's a Black teacher or in Dan's case, the Native American example?
Yeah, great question. I think it's important first to sort of back up a bit and just say that race has always mattered. Race has always been central to this American project, particularly establishing the supremacy of one race over another. So race has always been important. There has been sort of some clear evidence. Some of the more recent sort of quantitative evidence has come out of actually from Tom Dee at Stanford, who has measured sort of the quantitative impact for Black students when they have a Black teacher. And some of that evidence points to increased gains on standardized exams. So Tom looked at the Tennessee class size study. Before Tom's work, there have been lots of researchers like Vanessa Siddle Walker, the former AERA president, who have laid the foundation that informed lots of Tom's work, that talked about how Black teachers attended to the social and emotional learning of Black students. Gloria Ladson Billings talks about, I think some of this sort of goes to some of Dan's sort of the anecdote that Dan shared earlier about how Black teachers have been able to create culturally relevant curriculum, understanding the experiences of students and bridging the curriculum, thus creating learning for students. So I think that there's been a clear body of both qualitative research and quantitative research to what I call the added value for Black students when taught by a Black teacher. I think it's also important to say that Black teachers not only matter for Black students, but also matter for white students, for Latinx students. There's a recent study looking at the MET study, the Measures of Effective Teaching, that found that white students said that they preferred having teachers of color when compared to white teachers. So there's a growing body of evidence, qualitative, quantitative evidence, and also white children saying that in this diverse society, we want teachers who reflect the richness, the rich diversity of our country.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We are speaking today with Travis Bristol about the importance of having Black teachers, not just for Black kids, but for all kids, it sounds like.
Let me get to the chase. Right now, about 13.5% of the U.S. population is African-American. Mm-hmm. And right now, about 7% of K-12 teachers are African-American. So what are we aiming for? 13.4% African-American teachers, 20% African-American teachers. How should How should we know when we've recruited and retained enough? Am I asking the wrong question?
No, I think to start, a goal would be parity. We saw the federal courts in Boston, Judge Arthur Garrity in the famous, what's now known as the Garrity decision, mandated that Boston public schools have 25% Black teachers because to sort of mirror the 25% of Black students in the district because of Boston's track record of firing and not hiring Black teachers. So I think that in many ways, parity is a good place to start. And there are many states, there were 10 states that were part of a coalition led by the Council for Chief State School Officers. California was not one of those states, but 10 states across the country, like Mississippi, like Nebraska, like New York, that were aiming to get to parity. So I think parity is a good place to start. I would also say that parity should not mean Black teachers only teaching Black students, right? That parity means that in a diverse state like California, you have Black teachers teaching in Palo Alto, in Menlo Park, not only in Oakland or Richmond.
Right. So we're not trying to match. We're really trying to capture the distribution and allow the mixing.
Yes.
That would be able. So do you, New Orleans is kind of an amazing story. Do you know this story at all about where there were a tremendous number of African-American teachers and then Katrina sort of led to this push out? Can you describe that at all?
Yeah. So before Katrina, there was Chicago, and before Katrina in Chicago, there was Brown versus Board of Education. Policies and natural disasters, and I would actually say policies, that was a policy, to recruit and to displace teachers, particularly Black teachers. So in Katrina, and what we saw in Chicago, and also with Brown versus Board of Education, what happened was we had this natural disaster, and the school district wanted to reimagine the school district. And part of that reimagination was to bring in students or new recruits from Teach for America. And at that point, Teach for America's theory of change was to hire on average white teachers who had attended quote unquote elite institutions, believing that you just had to attend an elite institution to improve teaching and learning for Black students. And so what happened in Katrina, which also happened in Chicago, was that we saw displacement of Black teachers. And with Brown versus Board of Education, when Black children were integrated into white schools, their Black teachers were not integrated, and we saw Black teachers fired. So what happened in Katrina happened in Chicago, and it happened during Brown v. Board of Education.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We are talking with Travis Bristol about hiring and retaining more Black teachers and the importance of that and some of the history behind why we don't have that. What would you say to districts, and I've heard this, gosh, we're trying to hire diverse teaching population, but there just isn't a pipeline.
Yeah.
What would you say to that, Travis?
Yeah. I hear that a lot, and I wanted to understand that. I actually published a recent paper in ARA Open where a school district that had about 95% white teachers, and they wanted to, and they had about half students of color, mostly Latinx, and they said the superintendent wanted to hire more teachers of color. And so I and my colleague was white, because I thought I had the sense, and there's some research that would suggest that white teachers might say something different to someone who's white. But essentially what we found in this paper was that white teachers believed and wanted and valued the experiences of people who were like them. So the hiring committees who were mostly white teachers, that they valued and they valued the experiences of white teachers, that they put great emphasis on white teachers who were from that community, and that worked and that advantaged white applicants over applicants of color. And so what I would say is that yes, that there are many school districts who want to do this, and they are making some earnest attempts by creating these flashy campaigns. And yet the mechanisms that they're putting in place to hire teachers of color, or I think to your question, Black teachers, that some of that gets upended first from how the hiring committees are constructed, and how those hiring committees in some ways do not allow for the hiring of teachers of color because of bias in the hiring process.
And this was despite a mandate from the school district that you need to hire more diversely.
Yeah.
So committees had such a strong implicit bias that they couldn't get over it, even with that mandate.
That isn't surprising. I mean, I think Diva Pager talks about, and she talks about the mark of a criminal record. One of the things that she found was that a white man with a criminal record had a higher likelihood of getting a job over a Black man with a college degree. I mean, so there is bias in hiring. And so bias happens. And so in many ways, even though the superintendent said we want to hire more folks of color, not everything trickles down. And so that mandate sort of did not, it wasn't something that the people on the hiring committee wholeheartedly believed in, and it manifested itself in the district maintaining white teachers.
Yeah, so the way this happens at the university level is people want to hire someone who sort of studies what they study. Right. And so what do you end up doing? Well, you hire a group of people that look an awful lot like you because they study what you study.
Yes.
And so you have to really do strong incentives and procedures to stop that from happening.
Yes. And so one of the practices that another school district, this is actually Boston Public Schools, did was actually some of my work many years ago looked at the distribution of Black male teachers in that district. And one of the things I found was that Black male teachers were concentrated in schools that had larger numbers of Black students, which actually in many ways led to turnover because of the working conditions in those schools. But one of the things that Boston Public Schools eventually did was that they began to actually do some implicit bias training with the hiring committee so that they would be aware of the biases that we all bring by living in this society that by its very nature was constructed to be racist.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We will have more with Travis Bristol talking about the importance of recruiting and retaining Black teachers next on SiriusXM.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope
from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Travis Bristol about the importance of recruiting and retaining more Black teachers in education.
So Travis, so one issue is that if a teacher candidate comes to the door, the search committee may turn them back because they're not like them, something like that. Another is how do we get more African Americans to want to teach? So if my estimate is right, we're about 120,000 short. So why did you go into teaching?
Yeah.
Or because you have a college degree, you could go to Wall Street and become rich. You know, why teaching?
Yeah. So in many ways, when I went to Amherst College, a small liberal arts college, and I thought, I had made it, come from a working class family, was a Pell student. Pell Grant student. One, I took this undergraduate course, and I learned that in many ways, my experience in New York City public schools mirrored students' experience across the U.S. who were from historically marginalized communities. And so I thought, here I was at Amherst College, clearly I could and should give back in some ways. And then I saw this flyer for the fellowship, a graduate school fellowship, that if you decided to teach for 3 years, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund would give you $30,000 and loan forgiveness. And I said, sure, why not? I can teach for a couple of years and then, you know, be rich. and I knew very little about schools of education. And I had a professor of mine, he said, you know, you should consider applying to Stanford. I'd never been to California. And I said, sure, I'd come out to California for a year. That fellowship, in many ways, the teaching profession, a financially viable option because I wouldn't have to pay at that point. I don't know, Stanford was 50 some odd thousand dollars. I also just want to maybe push back on something that you said, because I think that yes, financial incentives are important. And there is a supply issue, and the supply issue doesn't begin only with giving people fellowships. The supply issue begins because we disproportionately suspend and expel Black children in K-12 schools. So that begins to cut off the supply. So I think we have to attend to what's happening in K-12 schools. We have to end harsh disciplinary practices. And we have to increase these fellowship opportunities for students like myself who might otherwise think about another profession.
I want to go back to something you said we talked about earlier, which is the real importance of having a Black teacher. And I think, you know, when you think about curriculum and particularly what's going on in the country today, I have a question as a white woman. I teach a curriculum course, how to design curricula. And I feel like we need to have Black teachers, Latinx teachers much more central in the curriculum discussions. And yet I don't think we have enough Black and brown teachers and teachers of color to do what is needed in terms of anti-racist curriculum. So are there enough teachers out there who can help not just redesign curriculum, but actually implement it, who are from traditionally marginalized communities? Or, you know, can a white woman like me teach an anti-racist curriculum? That's a bottom line.
I would say yes. And I would say yes, because you have many Black teachers who are teaching Eurocentric curriculums, right? Mm-hmm. So we are, in many ways, if you can prepare a Black teacher to teach a Eurocentric curriculum, then you can prepare a white teacher to teach an anti-racist curriculum.
Very clever.
That's really good. I love it. Okay, yeah. How do we do it, Travis? How do we do it?
So I think one of the ways is that we have to really interrogate teacher prep. I say that I had... when I went back to New York City to teach, on day one, I was prepared to teach because I had incredible training at Stanford. Pam Grossman taught my content methods courses. I'd had a course with Rachel Lotan in heterogeneous classrooms. LDH taught my adolescent development. You know, at this time,
that's Linda Darling Hammond. So Travis is listing the superstars of Stanford's School of Education.
And it's rare that in teacher prep programs, folks have these, right? And there were parts of my preparation that did not allow me to. Were lacking in some ways. So, for example, when it was time to talk about my white privilege, that was kind of hard to do because, right, in many ways, we organize teacher prep to serve those teachers who are in the majority. And at Stanford at the time, it was mostly white teachers. So I think that one way that we have to begin is to think about how we redesign or reimagine teacher prep, the curriculum, so that we allow all teachers to meet the goals that we have. And so I think I'm thinking about centering anti-racist curriculum, ensuring that all teachers see examples of teachers of color in the curriculum and who are deemed expert teachers, I think are all central.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Travis Bristol about the importance of having more Black teachers, not just in schools, but helping to develop curriculum and helping to work on anti-racist curriculum in particular. Not an easy task, but you gave me hope.
So, so I appreciate it. So let's say schools of education figured it out and they really could make a good anti-racist curriculum. Now I'm a teacher and I go into the schools and we seem to forget that part, the retention. So what's happening in this space to keep the teachers there? Because they oftentimes they end up in very hard schools.
The real issue is that we haven't paid enough attention to retention. And so teachers of color are being tracked into certain types of schools and being shut out of other types of schools. And the schools where teachers of color, and in particular Black teachers, are being tracked, those schools have the most challenging working conditions. And those conditions are not solely because of the students. It's because those schools have been historically marginalized, historically under-resourced. These schools have been schools that that in which children have not are not getting the kind of emotional support that they need. And so we place teachers, novice Black teachers into the most challenging schools, expecting them to be super people on day one.
So Travis, what are you doing work to see if you can improve this? Do you have like direct interventions or is it policy work?
The most recent project is one in New York City. So New York City started this initiative by Bill de Blasio, the mayor there, called NYC Men Teach. When the city approached me to design the policy, they were just focused on recruitment. But given some of the work that I'd done in Boston, I knew that recruitment wasn't enough, needed to pay attention to retention. And so one of the things that I think is remarkable about this initiative is that the school district began to recruit mentors and train these mentors to be mindful of how they may attend to the experiences of novice male teachers of color. So I've been studying that initiative for 3 years, from 2016 to 2019, and we've seen a slight uptick in the men of color in that district because of the shift not only from recruitment but also to thinking about attending to the professional learning, the social emotional experiences of these teachers.
Well, you give us hope, Travis. There's a lot of work to be done and you are right there doing it. So thank you. Thank you for being here and thank all of you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.